Welcome to another brand new episode of Take a Shelfie. It's a podcast about beer and friendship. I'm Jeff Martin, and with me as always is a man whose friends call him Snowmiser, Matt Prince. Matt, I am so sick and tired of it snowing every couple days.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Going into this winter, I was wondering if winter still even existed. You know, we didn't have any snow last year. And I think, what have we had now? Like three pretty significant snowstorms.
So yeah, like, I mean, for those of our listeners who don't live in the Northeast, and I guess really who don't live in Pennsylvania, because certainly our New England listeners have gotten bigger storms than we did. But we've had like 6 inches, then a couple days off, then 3 inches, then a couple days off, then a coating to an inch, then a couple days off, and it's going to snow again this weekend, perhaps. Yeah. It's and in the year where there's no snow days.
Right. Yeah. It's you know, it's kind of remarkable that through all this pandemic, you know, now we have another thing that's keeping us inside, you know, like in a way, the snow. And like, I just kind of stare at it. I'm like so in my house now that I look outside and I'm like, maybe I'll shovel, but like, I'm not going anywhere. So maybe I won't.
It's enough to make you sit back and enjoy a nice beer, which I am doing right now, Matt. We're both, I assume, I haven't seen you open your beer yet, but I assume we're both enjoying beer from today's guest, Love City.
Yeah, Jeff, I'm drinking Double Eraser Hood. Now, they have like a flagship IPA, hazy IPA. They have two like house IPAs, a hazy and non-hazy, and their hazy is Eraser Hood, which is the actual nickname of the neighborhood that the brewery is in. So I've always liked that beer, and they released a double version last week. So I made sure to pick up a can for each of us for this recording. Jeff, judging by the look on your face, you are not drinking the Hazy Boy. You are drinking the Crispy Boy.
Yes, I enjoyed the Hazy Boy with dinner. And I'll tell you, Matt, as you drink that, it is very juicy and is not one of those New England's that hides its alcohol. You can taste the 9.whatever%. But yeah, I'm drinking In Stereo Pilsner. It says crisp, hoppy, and refreshing. And you know what, Matt? It is all of those things.
Nice. I am looking forward to drinking it next. You know, might as well, but it's good, you know. And I'm loving the hazy, the Double Eraser Hood. Lots of, I mean, I told you before we started recording that I was like a foot and a half away from my glass, and there was just this onslaught of like tropical candy in my face. Mm-hmm. And the flavor backs it up, so I'm pretty pleased.
Now, Matt, before the pandemic hit, had you had an opportunity to get to the location at Love City?
Yeah, you know, I've been there. I've actually been there a few times. So I got there like the first week they were open. I don't remember, you know, I was at Yards for dinner with some of my high school friends. And we had originally planned on going to Love City afterwards, but we spent a really long time at Yards to the point where my friends were all ready to retreat to their homes. So on the way home, I stopped and grabbed a crowler of Eraser Hood, and they just opened. And, you know, I brought it home and had it that weekend, thought it was really delicious. I've spent Saturday afternoons there during a bachelor party. They actually allowed the food trucks that come to their brewery to pull in the back. So it's cool. The food truck's actually inside. And during the pandemic, I actually went and sat outside. So I've experienced it, you know, in all different ways. And I really enjoy being there. It's an amazing spot. I mean, in terms of all the breweries in Philadelphia, in terms of the physical space, I personally don't think it can be beat.
Yeah. So, Matt, I have been there a couple times myself. It's actually a pretty decent date spot for a single guy, which I am. You know, it's got like zones to it that you can sit at the bar and be tended to by a bartender. You can sit off to the side and people watch. There's places where you can play games. It's a real interesting spot. And Matt, today we're talking to one of the people who makes those very good beers.
Yeah, we're talking to Sean Goldinger who's one of the brewers there, and I'm pretty psyched to talk to him. You know, I reached out to the brewery and it was one of the best experiences. They got back to me quick. Melissa, who's one of the owners, got back to me and she was like, we have this brewer, Sean, who would love to hop on the podcast. I'm copying him on this email. You know, you guys can set it up. If you need my help, please, you know, reach out. So we still might reach out to her. She said if we needed like logos or anything for, you know, any sort of, you know, marketing we want to do with this episode, which was just like a breath of fresh air. And that's what I've heard about them. So, you know, I'm really excited to talk to Sean about the beers.
So let's not waste any more time, Matt. Sean Goninger, welcome to Take a Shelfie.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. So, Sean, you know, we asked this to everybody, so why be different? How did you get into craft beer?
That happened. So I moved down to Philadelphia in 2008 to go to college here. While I was going to Temple, I started getting into beer a little bit. On my 21st birthday, we went to Johnny Brenda's and I had my first craft beer. It was a Flying Fish XPA, way better than Lion's Head. Nothing against Lion's Head. It has its place late in the night, but, yeah, that definitely opened my eyes. I spent the whole summer taking my bike, picking up cases of random beer from beer distributors, going to any tasting I possibly could. Had one or two friends that were into craft beer, kind of slowly trickled my way into home brewing and then built up from there.
Throughout all the times we've asked that question, you're the only person besides me who's ever mentioned Flying Fish as one of the early craft beers that they drank. So that's dear to my heart. Our guest last week, Mike LaRosa from New Trail, sort of told us a little bit of Kevin's story, and his, you know, him cutting his teeth at Iron Hill. Mm-hmm. How did you get your start beyond home brewing in brewing beer? And then how did you hook up with Kevin and Melissa?
From starting to drink craft beer, the cafe I was working at, decided to open a second location that happened to be a bottle shop. They knew I was into craft beer. They put me in charge of beer buying. While working there, I was at Rye Brew in Brewery Town. Crime and Punishment was in the early stages of starting to open. So Rye Brew became like a local hangout for those guys. I got to know all the Crime and Punishment guys really well. As soon as they opened, I jumped over, started working with them, started making a little more connections, became good friends with both of the Mikes, Mike Paul and Mike Wombolt at Crime and Punishment. Definitely did some homebrewing with them and checked out their system, hung out for a few brew days. And then when I found out that Love City was opening up, I knew Mike T, who had worked at Bishop's Collar and was going over as a GM. And I love Mike. I always wanted to work with him. So I joined on the starting bartending team there. We opened up in April, coming up on 3 years ago. And then after about 8 months of working at Love City, one of the brewers ended up having to move. So they opened up a position. They wanted to find someone that they knew and that they could train up. So I let them know I was interested and Kevin brought me on. And it's been awesome. Kevin really knows what he's talking about. And he's a fantastic teacher. I've learned so much brewing under him.
That's awesome. So Love City, for people who are not familiar, you guys are pretty old school in the way your beer lineup is formulated. You know, you have your core beers, you know, you have like the Unity and you have, you know, Deep Cut Pills, and you know, you have about four or five beers that are your core. You'll occasionally do one-offs, like the beers we're drinking, the Double Eraser Hood, the In Stereo Pills. And is that important for Love City to have those core beers? And do you ever see the brewery going away from that?
I think for Love City, it's very important. Our lager is easily one of the biggest beers that we sell. If you've seen the can, you know the design's kind of retro. They wanted it to feel like an unpretentious staple, something that's there for everyone. It's a fantastic lager. It's well executed, but it's not in your face. It doesn't rub your nose in hops. It's a really great accessible beer. And I think a lot of the core approach for Love City is about accessibility. We do one-offs, we do weird stuff, and that stuff's been ramping up more and more. Especially with the pandemic, we've increased canning, got our own canning line. And in that regard, we've started packaging a lot more one-offs and unique beers like the Double Eraser Hood. But yeah, the main thing is we want to be on kind of both sides of beer production. We want to have the weird one-offs. We just released 6 different barrel-aged beers, 3 clean and 3 sour. And that's been a really fun project to build up over time. But honestly, without those cores and without having the kind of that like staple presence in the city, I just don't know that we'd have the same appeal. We want to make sure that we're there for the beer geeks, but we're also there for people who just needed beer after their shift.
So between the push and pull of all that, the weird stuff in the core, do you have a favorite style that you like to brew the most? And do you have a Love City brew that you like to drink the most?
So I'm very much into barrel beer and kind of odd Belgian yeast. I'm really interested in what a lot of local breweries are doing, like Referend and Forest in Maine. Those are types of approaches like spontaneous fermentation and wild capturing of yeast that I'm really interested in getting into in the long run. We are looking to get more used wine barrels to start building up almost kind of like a Solera project, which I'm really interested in. As far as beer making goes, I'm most passionate about the way the yeast kind of affects it and what really wildly different characteristics we can get from yeast and bacteria. As far as my favorite beer to drink, I spend my whole day drinking yeasty, hoppy things straight out of the fermenter. It's great to keep tabs on what we're doing and how the beer is going, but at the end of the day, I want something clean and light, something that doesn't stick on my palate. So I'm a soft pilsner, kind of clean lager guy at the end of a shift.
Does that hold when you're drinking beers that aren't Love City? Is that what you reach for if you're reaching for something that's not yours?
Definitely. Whenever I'm grabbing a beer from a brewery for the first time, I think I'm trying to get an idea of who they are and what they do. And for a while, I would go for the IPA because it was a standard. It was a staple. Every brewery had one. They had at least one. They had a core IPA. They had one-offs, double IPAs, everything. But it was the one style you knew you would find everywhere, and everyone had a general idea of how it worked. At this point, I think I definitely go more for lagers. It's harder to hide the flaws. It's a lot easier to see what's going on in a beer. You can kind of pick out a lot of problems that could happen in the brewing process by tasting something really simple and balanced like that. So I think lagers are a really, really good kind of canary in the coal mine for a brewery.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then I guess you just get super, super excited when you just nail a lager too, because of how hard it is to get it just right.
Yeah. Hill Farmstead Mary is one of my like favorite pilsners that I think of. A lot of stuff coming out of Suarez. I'm so happy when a batch goes well. The other brewer that I spend most of my time with, Toby, he's even more into Pilsner than I am. But both of us are very passionate about it. And yeah, when it works, it's so nice. It's so perfect.
Once again, I feel like we have to tell our viewers or, you know, our listeners, like, we don't put our guests up to this. They don't just gush about Pilsners, like, because we told them to. People love Pilsners, not just us. So just throwing that out there. So Sean, you did like a nice little connect the dots for us on your own history. You know, you even dropped some names of some really well-known Philadelphia bars like Rye Brew and like Bishop's Collar. And you talked about Crime and Punishment. You know, what is it like? Talk about the Philadelphia brewing community. And what's it like being part of such a dedicated and talented group of brewers?
So when I first started getting into beer and learning more about this, everything seems so mysterious. Brewing seems like such a mythical or spiritual experience. But the more you learn about it, there's such a simplicity to it. But every little nuance is important. Something I found incredible about Philadelphia's brewing scene and any brewer I've met across the country, but specifically in Philadelphia, is that everyone wants to talk shop. Everyone knows what their favorite beer in the city is. You're excited to tell a customer about other breweries they should go visit. There's a camaraderie to Philly brewers that's outstanding. Anytime you run into one of them, it's like seeing your best friend at the bar out of nowhere. Yeah, there's a lot of heart in Philly, and everyone looks out for one another. There's no competition that I've ever seen. We just want to help each other out and learn.
So going beyond the present of Philadelphia brewing, on the Love City website, it talks a lot about appreciation for the history of brewing in Philadelphia. Talk about how important history is to Love City itself and how that history informs the beer making and the marketing.
Okay. So I think so Kevin and Melissa definitely have both found a really good home in Philadelphia. And all of us have a good chunk of the staff there, transplants from other places, lots of central PA are kind of all over. But everyone's really found a good place in Philly. There's a huge brewing tradition to Philadelphia, but for a good bulk of the last century, we weren't the premier production city in the country. Despite that, a long time ago, I mean, Brewery Town up where Crime and Punishment is had one of the highest concentrations of breweries in the country at one point. But between Prohibition and World War II, the brewing scene really left here. And when I moved to Philadelphia, it had a reputation of being one of the best beer cities in the country, but it was for what we had access to, not what we produced here. And just in the 13 years or so that I've been in Philly, it's been incredible to see such a big growth. Kevin and Melissa definitely know their place in history. I think you guys were talking about kind of an older approach, having the core product. They know how things have been run. They know that there's kind of a respect and tradition to brewing. It's been around for as long as we've settled as people. So I think it's really important. Even the logo has three parts to it, but the flame in particular is it's representative of kind of just the fire, the heat element of brewing. The other two definitely really tie together kind of the mission and the range of our beers. The pen is definitely kind of like the thoughtful, conversational, philosophical side of sharing a beer with someone. But on the other side, we have the hammer, kind of the producer, the labor. And it's this unity of kind of both sides. It's something that brings people together. It's something that always has. And in a city where that's been part of the blood of the city for the entire time it's been around, it's definitely very important to be kind of holding on to that tradition here.
So you talk about bringing people together, and Jeff and I were both very lucky to get our hands on one of your collaborations that you did with two locals. You did The Black is Beautiful with two locals, and it was fantastic. It was a great beer. And then more recently, you collaborated with New Trail on a beer for their second expedition pack. Can you talk about that Pilsner that you brewed with Mike?
Yeah, so that one, unfortunately, because of COVID, I know some people definitely felt comfortable making the trip up there. They were able to make perfectly safe accommodations. Some people on our staff, including myself, were a little more concerned and trying to stay cautious. We weren't able to have a physical presence up at the brewery. So to be honest, the majority of that collaboration was conversations between Kevin and the guys up at New Trail. My understanding is it's kind of the dead center between our approaches to lager production or Pilsner brewing. I know we have some coming. I haven't had it yet, but I'm definitely looking forward to it.
And, you know, I just mentioned two locals. I mentioned New Trail. Is there a brewery or a brewer that as a brewer you'd love to collaborate with just based solely on the beers that you've enjoyed from them?
It's a good question. I mentioned them before, but Referend is a brewery that I would love to get in touch with. I talked about kind of the mysticism and almost spirituality of beer, and that really does it for me. The idea of just kind of setting up the conditions and preparing as best as you can, but then letting this wild element of that literal spontaneity come into it. You're essentially building a framework, but you're giving control up to something beyond yourself. And there's something really beautiful to that. I've tasted a lot of their beers, and some of them I've absolutely loved. Some of them have been pretty tart for my taste, but I'm fascinated by what they're doing, and I would definitely love to hang out with them.
Sean, before you got on, Matt and I were talking about the physical space at Love City. And it's a really cool spot. And you guys, for the most part, have been able to keep your doors open in some way for most of the pandemic, but because you have a huge lot, big tent, you bring in food from outside. As a brewer, how has the pandemic affected what you do on a daily basis, though?
It's definitely changed a lot. I think part of the reason we aren't necessarily known for our wide range of recipes is because most of the one-offs and kind of series beers went into kegs. We didn't can every single beer that we produce. We really only focused on the core line and just kind of getting those products out there. But most of our distribution was done in draft. We were so lucky to pick up a canning line just at the start of this. We were already headed that way anyways. We're working with mobile canners before that. And so we've gone from mostly working the brew house throughout the week to kind of brewing and canning two times each per week, occasionally doing both in the same day. It's been crazy, kind of a lot more splitting, a lot more multitasking to try to maintain both sides of that system. But it's been great. I've been able to learn so much about the canning process. Something that we saw come into the building so frequently, but it was always operated by other people. Now we're running it ourselves, and we've had the opportunity to play and experiment and really dial in what we're doing on that. So that's been probably the biggest change for us.
So you're 3 years in, and you know, Love City has managed to really become a big player in the Philly beer scene. I mean, you guys are right in the center of it all, just in terms physically in your location. But you've managed to do so without really garnering a ton of hype. Now, we talk about the old school approach that Kevin and Melissa really embraced and, being able to be an accessible brewery. But as a brewer, you know, is that what you prefer to, you know, kind of do things the right way and not garner the hype? Or would you prefer to have, you know, a line of people, you know, down the block for a can release?
I think there's a... there's a lot to be gained. You can grow really quickly with more of the hype style. But there's also an intense vulnerability to it. You attach yourself to potentially dateable styles. I don't have any beef with how any other breweries operate, but to some degree, Kevin and Melissa don't want people to line up and have to wait for the beer. Kevin and Melissa want people to be able to just go out and try it. We are accelerating. We've been noticing more and more that some of our batches are disappearing like that. I was barely able to score a can of the Double Eraser Hood. We're almost entirely out of it at the tasting room. So we are moving through beer faster, but honestly, they've been so focused on just making it accessible that I think avoiding things that could be tied to the impression that the craft beer scene can be pretentious has been very important to them. They want to make it visually accessible, pragmatically accessible, and stylistically accessible.
I don't want this to sound like I think that your approach is handcuffing creativity at all, because you certainly haven't given that impression. But is there any style that you guys have done only a few recipes of, or not at all, that you like to try some more?
Definitely. And I would say that that's more market demand than anything else. Anytime we brew Saison, it sits. It's a fine style to sit, but I'm in love with anything in the Belgian tradition, and it definitely hurts to go in the cold box and see those kegs moving so much slower than anything else. I'd love to be able to produce more beers like that and be able to learn them faster and try different variants of them. But it's more of a demand and style bias issue than anything else.
Bring all those Belgians to me.
Yeah. No,
I'll happily take them. So Sean, what's next for Love City? Is it that you got this new canning line and now you're starting to get a little bit out more into the market? Is that sort of the next big move?
Yeah. So, They Kevin and Melissa and the entire management team have been fantastic through all of COVID. They've been incredibly supportive of all of the staff members. Our retention rate has been insane. Even when bartenders weren't able to come in and work, when they came back, they almost entirely came back. They were able to keep everyone afloat and support everyone and take their jobs as owners and employers very seriously by branching out. And we've done that through self-distribution, moving out into the counties more, getting more grocery store accounts, which are definitely a lot more stable than bars or anywhere where people are consuming on premises. And that has been incredible, but it also means when everything opens back up, we're looking at a much more expansive foothold than we had before. So as of right now, we're kind of gearing up, getting ready for different stages of reopening. I think our biggest challenge in the future is going to be keeping up with demand with the foothold we have. But we have a lot of strategy and long-term planning, including additional tanks, additional staffing in the brewing area, restructuring of the space to kind of accommodate multiple processes happening simultaneously. Right now, we're brewing before canning on a double day, but potentially trying to work both in simultaneously. It's a great problem to have, but I think our biggest problem moving forward is managing the demand for the beer relative to our production capabilities.
Well, I mean, I saw some Love City at the bottle shop near my home all the way out here in Delaware County. And so it's really exciting that you guys are starting to grow, and we wish you nothing but luck and success as it grows, because the product is phenomenal, and we want more regular access to it. And we'll have to come down to the location and have some more when society is rebuilt. So, Sean, thank you so much for being on the show.
Of course. Yeah, whenever we hit more of an open phase, you guys come on down. And if you ever see me through the window in the brewery, just come bang on the window. I'll come out and hang.
Love it. Matt, I've really got to start learning to not hit pause when we think the interview is over, because we just talked to Sean for another 7 or 10 minutes about the Philly beer scene in general.
But, you know, Jeff, that's kind of the fun part about doing a beer podcast. You get to have those 7 and 10 minutes that the listener doesn't get. It's like our little treat. I'm cool keeping it, you know, for us.
Maybe what we need to do is start a Patreon, and then like the only patrons get to see like those extra behind the scenes interviews and right. Bloopers and all the failed with me as always is.
Oh yeah. Yes. That would be, that'd be really funny. We should probably start, you know, putting those out there.
Yeah. Because there's certainly a lot of failed with me as always is.
Oh, there are. And I get to experience all of them. Lucky me.
Yeah, so that was great. So I guess for the moment, that sort of completes our mini tour of Pennsylvania breweries. We're certainly reaching out to more breweries to try to get them on. We're going to try to even expand our reach beyond Pennsylvania, because we know we have listeners from outside of Pennsylvania. We're going to be back next week, I think, with a style series episode. We're going to return to the style series. You can listen to that in the same way you listen to this, hopefully, by subscribing to Take a Shelfie wherever you get fine podcasts. While you're there, please leave us a nice review. It really helps with the promotion of the show. It puts it in front of other people's eyes. You can follow us on Instagram at ShelfiePod, and you can visit us at ShelfiePod.com. We post all our episodes there, and we leave the comments open for you to tell us what you thought of the episode. That will do it for this week's episode. I'm going to finish enjoying this delicious and stereo pills. Matt, you've just opened yours, so you're going to be enjoying yours. And I'm very, very sad for our listeners that they don't get to enjoy it. But hopefully they'll get to enjoy the type of beer that we're talking about next time in the style series. Until that happens, I'm Jeff Martin.
And I'm Matt Prince.
Cheers.